I've always had this desire to control everything. My mental state, what's going on in the world, other people, what other people think of me. I just want to control everything. And I finally realized that I've been really angry that I can't control everything because almost everything is beyond our control. And identifying this anger has allowed me to have more acceptance that most things aren't in my control. And that acceptance has allowed me to kind of move on and like focus on what I can, in fact, control, which unfortunately is all the boring stuff like eating well and exercising and all that shit. Like, I can eat as much quinoa as I want, and it sucks. I hate quinoa. But last week I talked about this fear of getting happy and therefore not doing the things we know will make us happy because we're afraid that once we're happy, we won't have the drive to pursue our goals anymore. Which I talked about isn't true, but also even before the fear, sometimes these things that we know are in our control that will help us feel better, we're not even afraid to do them. They're just kind of boring. And boredom is something I've been thinking about a lot lately. I do all this work on myself, and the end result, when things are kind of just going along, can be boredom. And I've recently been majorly cutting down on my social media use. And at first I was like super excited about the idea of it. I was like, yeah, I'm going to be like just not looking at social media that much, like super focused, like time to focus on like other stuff that's more important to me. But now that I have all this extra time without social media, it's like, okay, well now what? We talk so much about the pursuit of well-being, but what do we do when we actually get well? And I mean, the answer is just to wait a little because, you know, shit always comes up and stuff will get hard very, very quickly. Those, like, you know, boredom spells actually don't last that long. So it's actually good to just stay with them and to not fear boredom. Because for me, my greatest inspiration actually comes from these periods of boredom. It gives my mind the space to process things and to really have ideas about stuff going on in my life and in the world and to like be a true observer. It's great for coming up with stand-up material. And so don't be afraid to, you know, take care of yourself and to lean into the boredom. We should be so lucky. And if you are bored, something you can do is tell a friend about this podcast, go rate and review it on Apple Podcasts. I'm so sorry about this segue, but you know, what are you going to do? My guest today is a hilarious stand-up comic, Ashley Gavin. Ashley is a friend of mine, and she's very smart and funny and has a great podcast called We're Having Gay Sex, available wherever you get podcasts. Okay, without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Ashley Gavin. The last time I saw you in person, was it with Sam Morrison like a year ago?
At the MoMA gift shop?
But I remember, like, it was one of those things where I'd met you doing shows and I was always like, I really like her and we should hang out. And like, we kind of never did. And then like this one magical day we did.
Yeah.
And it was like everything I could have hoped for and more. It was so fun. Like, this was like this perfect little trio, at least in my mind.
And me too. I'm all for the trio. We should trio up again.
And it never happened again.
But we were planning something, I think. And then the pandemic hit. I feel like we were going to do a Zumba class or something.
Oh, right. Oh, we were going to go to my roommate's fitness class, the dance workout. And then, yeah, the pandemic kind of fucked everything up. Well, we'll pick up where we left off when we all get vaccinated and it'll be great. But I feel like you've been really keeping busy during this time creatively with with your podcast and with like, I don't know, because I've had to get a little more creative, like with my podcast and with like more writing, I almost feel like this different kind of fulfillment. Like, are you feeling a different kind of satisfaction right now?
Kind of. I miss stand up so much. Every time I do stand up, I get the opportunity to perform outside, no matter how shitty the conditions are. Because let's be clear, stand up should not be done outside ever under any circumstances. It should not be done over Zoom under any circumstances. Zoom doesn't do it for me. But when I do an outdoor stand-up show, I come back and I am just like ecstatic. I am so happy. And not to sound like a douchebag, but my career has gotten so much better because of the pandemic, because it forced me to do things that, frankly, I don't traditionally like. I do not like TikTok, social media. I do not like YouTube. Even podcasting, I love the interviews. It's so much fun. It's so much fun to riff. But at the end of the day, if you were like, do you want to do a shitty stand-up show or do you want to do a great podcast? I'd be like, I think I want to do the shitty stand-up show. And so what the pandemic has done for me is forced me to get good at things that were not necessarily crafts that I was inclined towards, but to practice those crafts as if they were the only thing that I had, which has transformed my career, which is great because you're like, oh, now I'm speaking to an audience. Now I'm affecting people. People are writing to me, talking about my work. That is the validation that I've been craving for so long. But it's also reframed everything for me because it's this weird thing where I'm like, I think I would almost, if it's really hard to not be a stand-up comedian and be able to perform at your optimal level if you're good.
Right. Right.
Because you need the stage and you need to put butts in the seats. But now it's like, well, what do I really want to do? Do I want to be a podcaster and like have those seats, but have to podcast all the fucking time to like perform that stand up? Because I think at the end of the day, if I could just do the one thing, it would be stand up and never achieve any fame and not even care about it and just be like a great stand up.
Yeah. I feel like so many stand ups and I myself included, it's like we just, stand-up is so fun and incredible and like uses so many different types of like art forms all into one.
Yes.
And I don't know. I feel like these shitty outdoor shows and then also having to do comedy over Zoom is like karma for every time I like bitched about a bar show that had like six people in the audience. And I'm like,
and you're like, oh, these shitty producers.
I had to go up last. Like they let me early. And it's like, God, just
the
give
guy
me like
before
a roof.
Me blew the light. Like you're just, give me a roof.
Yeah. Like now, as long as the show is inside, I'm going to be so ecstatic.
Yeah.
But yeah. I know what you mean. Like, I feel like I can kind of put it out of my mind and like focus on podcasting and writing and whatever else, viola, like, and then I go do an outdoor show and I'm like, oh shit, I love this so much. I forgot. And this
it almost feels like a drug because you're like, why do I love this so much? I love it more than anything in the world. And I miss because your podcast is about craft. I miss feeling like I'm on my A game with stand up because I go and I do these outdoor shows and I'm doing my A game material and there's technical aspects to it. Being outside affects your rhythm. It affects the laughs that you're hearing, which affects your rhythm more. I mean, there's all kinds of things that definitely change it. But also because I can't perform as much, I'm not at prime sharpness. I'm not writing as much. I'm not refining my writing as much. I have not written, you know, usually every year. I pride myself on writing. Like, I'll write a lot of material. I've not written a lot of material this year. Makes me feel bad about myself. So it just sucks to get up there and to love it so much and then conversely be like, but this could have been better and this could have been better. And like, why haven't you finished this joke yet? And it's weird. It's a weird time.
Yeah. And when you listen back to a set that you recorded, you're like, okay, well, next time I do that, I'll tweak this. And usually we're used to that being like in an hour. And now we're like, maybe that's exactly. In like 2 weeks. I don't know.
Exactly. And you're like, Emma, can I even tweak it? There's something about having that immediate knowledge with to be able to be like, I did this wrong. And now I'm going to correct this thing very specifically. And then all this time goes by and you have 30 more ideas. And you're like, which joke do I work on? Like, I have like so many half-baked jokes that are not going to get baked. And it's like, which one of those am I going to come back with and talk about when this is all over?
Yeah, I have like a notebook full of just like sort of half-baked premises. And then yeah. sort of like, well, I can't really hash this out until, because the being on stage, no matter how much, like, I don't know what your writing style is. For me, like, I write a lot before I go on stage. A lot of people like work it out on stage more. But no matter what, no matter how much preparation you do, like, the stage part is so vital to the writing process.
So critical. I typically will write one premise with like a pretty significant attitude. Like, I know what my attitude about the premise is with like one punchline. And then I'll have that, after that, I'll just kind of talk about it and see if I find anything else that comes after that punchline. Or to like, I you're friends with Sam. We were just talking about Sam. When we went on tour, I argued with him about this so much. He would be like, I have all these changes I want to make to these jokes, and I'm going to test all of them. And I'd be like, no, you fucking idiot. What you want to do, pick one of those changes per joke and just change that one thing and see if that works. Because you don't know how they're going to affect each other. So right. you got to debug it. You got to central in on like what the one thing is.
It's like an elimination diet. Like when you like you want to see like what affects you negatively, you like stop eating everything and then you have to add in one thing at a time to see yes. like what affects what. You can't just that's like how, be like, now I'm going to try all these different foods.
Yeah, that's how I work. So that's why that one punchline is critical. And then the rest after that punchline, I'll experiment. And then maybe there's one thing that I add into it from that experimentation. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. sort of like I'm constantly just trying to get the one tweak, which is why we go on stage 5 times a night if we can.
Right.
Because then you can figure out so much about that joke you really can't figure out over. You just have, it's just a very dumb art form. You spend really hours dumb. And hours and hours trying to make one word work. And then you're like, oh, great. And then at the end of the year, you've developed 5 new minutes.
Right. You're like, is it pause, pause, poop? Or is it pause, poop? Like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like pause, poop worked better tonight. So I'm going to stick yeah. with that. I'm assuming stand-up was like your first type of performance that you pursued. Like, were you doing acting before? Or
I acted as a kid. I was in like a theater group and did theater my whole life, but not on like a professional level, but I wanted it to be on a professional level. But my mom was just like in no way, shape or form equipped to be like a mom that helps a child with a career or a craft. Like that was so not my mom.
You didn't have a stage mom.
I did not at all. And so I think that kind of actually led me to try to avoid it for a really long time. And then, you know, I'm 22, I'm very depressed at my job. And I was just like, fuck it, I originally was writing a musical with a friend of mine, a comedy musical.
Oh, wow.
And then, I'm not, trust me, it's not
Do
impressive.
Do you sing or play music or what? Why a musical?
I don't sing. I think had I been put in voice lessons at a young age, I could maybe sing. Because I was in all the musicals in school. And
you have it in you.
I believe I do. I have a very loud voice. I feel like I could do something with it.
Mm-hmm. And you're not tone deaf.
No, I'm not. And so I've been in musicals.
Yeah.
So not that that means anything, but I'm not tone deaf. I can hit the notes. I can, right. I get better if I practice. I'm not like a gift. I could never have been a musical theater person, but I'm saying like, I'm okay at singing.
Yeah.
And I used to write song parodies when I was a kid. I loved song parodies.
Me too.
So me and my friend, who's a really talented composer, we wrote a musical for my camp when I was 19. I can't believe I'm talking about this.
Did it ever get performed?
It did. It's called The Camper Trap, and it was a satire of The Parent Trap, but the kids are fraternal twins who look nothing alike. And then their parents want to get back together, but don't tell them, and then send them to the same camp. And that's where they're going to tell them they want them to be friends.
That's great.
Thank you. And they hate each other. And then the musical within the musical is Parent Trap.
So did you also write like a musical version of The Parent Trap? Because that doesn't exist,
does
it?
There's one song within the musical, about learning that you have a twin. And it was the moment, it was coincidentally the moment where the actual twins learned that they were twins. So the song had double meaning.
So do the fraternal twins like play, quote, identical twins in the...
No, because there's a running gag. One of them plays a tree and the other plays the lead. There's a running gag. The theater director is like, no one would ever cast you two as twins. You look nothing alike. And that's the running gag throughout the joke, is people would constantly be like, wow, you two literally look nothing alike, even though no one knew that they were related. That was the whole thing. That was the shtick.
It's love stupid. A running gag. Love a musical within a musical. Love everything about it. Honestly,
thank you.
I hope that gets revived. That's. I also am surprised that you seem like you've never talked about this before. So I'm honored that you felt like you could open up about it.
Does not come up often.
What was your job before, when you said you were depressed at your job?
I was a software engineer. I was at MIT writing code. At a lab.
I feel like we've talked about this before, how we were both
You are also a person, and this is very rare in the stand-up comedy community, because most of the stand-up comedy community is a bunch of delinquents and they've never done anything in their life.
Yeah. No offense, and I love every other comedian, but
no, I wish I had been like that, frankly, because then maybe I would have started earlier and I'd be further along.
Yeah,
but too. You have an incredible talent. That might be an understatement. You're like a genius.
Oh my God, stop.
And do the people at home know what a genius you are? Do they know?
Yeah. That's the theme of the podcast, is that I'm a Juilliard trained musician and a stand-up comedian. So
great. You know. So they all know what a fucking genius you are, and that you've essentially gotten about as far as you could. Like, you're a professional violist. Professional violist, one of the hardest things in the entire world to do.
There aren't that many violists, but it was a good career move picking that instrument.
You get what I'm saying?
Go on.
Though, to get to the level where you are a full-time musician, especially a classical musician, seems super, super difficult.
Yeah, it was something I spent my whole life on. It's like a lifelong pursuit.
Just accept the compliment. And
thank
then you were like, fuck this. I'm going to do this other insanely hard thing that's almost impossible to get to the professional level. And I don't know what your whole thing is, but you seem to be very close to that, if not doing it. And like, in terms of income, in terms of status, you're there. Tonight show, you've done it. The thing is that this industry is a fucking bitch. So, you know, I don't know what your financial situation but who cares? You're on The Tonight Show. Mine was not as hard as violist, but I was a software engineer at MIT. And people find this absolutely wild and fascinating, and I don't care.
Right. Right. That is like a very, like I could never imagine being a software engineer. MIT sounds very intimidating. Like, clearly, you know, you and I always like saw each other and we're like, oh, like fellow genius who threw it away to tell jokes in the back room of a bar. And I don't know, maybe it's just because we're both like really, really depressed and that's what happens. You just like fucking are like, well, I don't know, pursuing like this really hard thing really well for my whole life didn't do it. Maybe telling a joke about my really butt will.
Yeah, yeah. I think I was just avoiding. This is what I was supposed to be doing, and I did improv at the UCB, and I tried to make sketches at home, and it stand-up was just very clearly the correct medium of performance comedy art that I was supposed to be doing. And now I get to act sometimes, rarely, occasionally, too, which is cool.
Why do you think you were avoiding it for so long?
Probably my relationship with my mother.
The answer for everything.
I think my whole life felt guilt about spotlight, you know,
interesting.
Spotlight guilt.
Cause I avoided the spotlight for a while as well. Cause viola is like I picked the viola because it was like a team instrument, you know, like there aren't that many viola soloists. I always dreamed of being like a quartet or in an orchestra.
Yes. Yeah.
But my avoidance of the spotlight wasn't from any kind of guilt. I think it was just like, I wasn't confident enough in myself. I was just like, who, me? Like, no, I'm just gonna like do this really specific thing and like help the group and feel good that way.
That's so interesting. I wanted to be very, very successful and known, but I wanted it to be in a more altruistic way. Like, mm-hmm. I wanted to, like, make something for people as opposed to stand up is for me and for me alone. And I love that it helps people, like, have a nice night. But at the end of the day, I'm doing stand up because I love stand up.
I know. It's so funny because you hear these comedians sometimes on stage be like, sorry, like if there's like a heckler interrupting, it's like, can you let me do my job, please? And I'm like, oh, yeah. Your job that you like, oh, you have to do your job, poor you. Like as if it's not just like the only thing that makes you happy in life. Like it's just right. So.
It's this weird dichotomy where you are providing a service for people, but like at the end of the day, like if those people suck, like if you have a bad audience, if I have a bad audience, I tell them that they're bad. I'm like, you guys are bad. And I basically bully them into laughing. That's like my approach when I have an audience that I don't like. A lot of people disagree with it, but it's what works for me.
Right.
yeah. But like, it's because I deserve more. Like that, like I want them to have a good time, but frankly, I require more from you. You're messing this up. I'm fine. Let's like get on the same page here.
I feel like that's a really helpful attitude to have that I don't have, where it's just like, you're the default is like, I deserve more. Like, please give me. Whereas if they're not laughing, I'm just like, I'm so sorry. I probably shouldn't have come here. Like, I'm so sorry for wasting your time.
But that's a great, if you can confidently do what you just did, that works too. It's just like a different way to get people on board.
I know there's like a weird, cause I'll listen back to different sets. And sometimes it's like, oh, why did the insecure thing work and here? And why did it not work here? And there's like some very elusive thing that like I can reach where people realize that I'm still like, okay with myself, even if I'm acting insecure rather than like, I actually want to like go fucking cry my eyes out.
Insecurity is a performative choice. It's a choice as a performer. And you're actually quite confident, even though it's almost like acting. Like they know that you're in, I think it's the control aspect because it happens with anger too. If they suspect that I'm actually angry at them, that I've lost control, then people are like, please stop yelling at us. Right. But if they know that I'm in full control, they're like, she doesn't mean this. This is part of her thing. And then they don't get mad at you for saying really mean things to them.
Right. Because there are so many comics I can think of whose thing are like, they're an asshole or they're mean to the audience. And the audience loves it. Like they love Bill being Burr. Shit on. Bill Burr. Yes. Great example. You know, a bunch of other ones. As I said that, I was like, you better have some examples ready. And then I just went totally blank. So, but like, I just wonder like what I'm always like searching for that thing that makes me seem like I'm actually in control and okay. And like, once you start searching for it, like you're kind of fucked too. Like yeah, it is this yeah. thing you really have to like, I don't know. It's this really weird kind of game you have to play with yourself. And I don't know, are there times where you know, like you're going to be in that zone where you're like totally in control and cool and they're going to know you're not actually angry?
Am I allowed to sound almost completely, totally like a sociopath arrogant?
Yeah, please.
Cool. I know how to cultivate that now when I didn't know how to. And of course, I don't do it with perfection. But for me, it's presence. It's like feeling totally present in the moment. And I started practicing meditation almost 3 years ago now, 2.5 years ago. And as I got better and better at meditation, I got better and better at not losing myself and getting in my head when I was on stage. Mm-hmm. And now I have a much more, I'm like flow state ready. It's a flow state. I think it's the flow state. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I totally know what you're talking about. I think about flow state all the time. And I think it's like one of those things where people tell you to meditate and then you do a few times and you're like, okay, this isn't really working. But meditation is something you have to practice just like any other skill. Like you have to
literal months before you'll see anything. Yeah. I started practicing it because I was depressed and like suicidal and shit. Like I was very desperate to find something. So the stakes were high.
Well, you said you were taking a happiness class the last time I saw you.
Yeah.
Is that from the happiness class?
I started meditating before the happiness class for the same reasons I started the happiness class. I was like, things are very bad. You got to switch some shit up. And meditation has been like the best thing that's ever happened to me.
I mean, I think I've reached a better place because of like not drinking and just sort of like getting in a better headspace. But I think like I could definitely stand to do more like actively good things for myself, like meditation and things. And I've been talking about this on the podcast a little, just like, did you ever feel when you were depressed, like that you were kind of afraid to get happy because then you would like lose your edge and like lose your creative drive?
I think a little bit. I think for me, it was more like, am I going to be complacent? Am I not going to demand the absolute best of myself all the fucking time to the point where it's like pretty unhealthy? Because sometimes you demand stuff from yourself that's beyond your control. And right. Like, what is the point of like criticizing yourself for something that you did your absolute best at? And at the end of the day, if JFL doesn't pick you, JFL doesn't pick you. And it really had nothing to do with your performance. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I think picking on yourself for stuff like that is just like not healthy. And that's, look, I'm not on here pretending to be some sort of fucking guru, but I went from like having much less control of my emotions and my reactions to having a lot more control. And that has really helped me on stage, and it's helped me in my relationships and like all kinds of stuff.
It's funny that you say that you're worried the happiness was going to make you like complacent, because I don't think I've ever heard of someone who like got happy and then became like a fucking degenerate because they were just like yes. too happy. Like
it's been quite the opposite. As soon as I got happy, I got a new manager, my podcast took off. Like, that is not a coincidence that right. I like am radiating happy energy as opposed to radiating, I'm going to jump in front of a train any day now, you know?
But then it becomes this trap, because then I hear stories like yours where it's like, actually, when I got happy, I became more productive. And then it's like, okay, well, then I just need to like get happy and then I'll get the thing I want. Like, it keeps like doubling back on itself. Like, again, it's this trap, like this game you have to, that I felt like I was playing with
maybe
myself.
Maybe you need to hit rock bottom. That's what happened to me. You hit rock bottom and then you're like, oh, if I don't do anything, I'm going to die. Because that's what right. was happening.
You really weren't thinking about like your career. You were just like, I have to do something. So I
literally
don't die.
Was like, I'm going to, well, the only reason I was thinking about my career is because my career kept punching me in the face. I had gotten Kimmel, and then Kimmel canceled stand up. On Kimmel. They had gotten rid of stand-up. So I like booked Kimmel and they were like, oh, sorry, we're getting rid of stand-up for a while. And then like a number of things like that happened to me in a row. I was in a really screwed up relationship and I found out that my therapist of 25 years was dying. So I hit like sort of a depression that I like couldn't get out of bed for like, it wasn't that long. I think I was in and out of light depression for a really long time. But then I kind of was like not getting out of bed for a few days. And I was like, okay. And I had suicidal ideation. Sorry, you probably didn't know this was all going to come up.
Please, thanks for sharing it.
Yeah, no problem. Whatever. If this helps anybody, seriously. But then I was like, okay, I got to fucking do something. I hear about this happiness project thing. It was Yale. I was like, that's fancy. I'm going to take the class. And I did it with full discipline. Like, I do all the activities every day. I still do them every day. I go in and out of periods where I'm not as thorough. Like, my meditations are shorter and maybe I'm only working out once a week as opposed to working out three times a week and doing my 20 minutes every day. But, like, I'm doing them and I don't want to die anymore. And so I highly recommend it.
Yeah, that seems like a pretty good endorsement. Like, you wanted to die and now you don't. Yeah. Like, what more do you need, really? Yeah. I just remember,
but I don't think I would have done it if I hadn't hit rock bottom.
Right, right. It's kind of like, if you don't hit bottom, you're kind of like, well, I don't know if I need to do... Yeah, I mean, I go back and forth. Sometimes I'm like, is this bottom? Is this bottom? And then, like, the next day, I'm like, kind of okay. It's like such a roller coaster for me. Or it has been. Lately, I think I've been much more... The pandemic, ironically, like, has helped me get a little more, like, stabilized, I think. Because, yeah. like, with all the space, I've finally been able to be like, oh, this is just one of my moods and I know exactly how long this is going to last.
Yes.
And then I'm going to be okay. And just knowing that it's going to, kind of like when you get broken up with for the first time, you're like, am I going to feel like this forever? I might. Yeah. And then you get over it. And then every other breakup, no matter how sad it is, you just kind of like, no. You're just aware.
That's like a meditation thing. They call it blue sky. You're just like aware that some clouds are in front of the sky is still there. You're just like, there's some clouds in front of it right now. And if I just like observe the clouds and like let the clouds be there, they will eventually go away.
Right. You're not like, I guess there's no more sky.
Right. Like, yeah. But that's like when you want to die. Like that's right. The want to die. You're like, nothing matters. There's no sky.
Right. I remember when I met up with you and you were telling me about the class, you like paid for my lunch and you were like, oh, it'll be one of my acts of kindness today. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
You're like, I do an act of kindness every day as part of my happiness class. And I was like, oh, that's so... so nice.
I'm such a dick about it too. I don't even tell you like how annoying that I'm like, it's for me. Like, right. This is not for you. This is so that I feel better.
But it made me feel better then. Because then I didn't feel as much like, oh, I gotta like be like, I owe her now. I mean, you know, I would want to like get you back, of course.
I forgot that happened.
I owe you lunch for one of my acts of kindness.
Right.
So
then we can be in one of those Andy Dwight standoffs. Do you remember that episode of The Office?
No, I'm surprised I don't remember that one, but I can imagine what happened. So you said you started as an actor, and I'm wondering, like, going into stand-up and then like now acting again, because stand-up usually opens up the acting door for people. Yeah. Because stand-up is kind of acting in a lot of ways. Do you feel differently about acting? Is it still like the thing you like the most, or now you like stand-up?
I love acting. I never have the opportunity. I rarely have the opportunity to improve. One of my pandemic plans, or my not pandemic plans, that kind of got railroaded, was I wanted to go and study at Strasbourg in like an intensive 3 or 4 week program or something. And I still want to do that. But I know for a fact that I'm not as trained an actor as I am a trained stand-up. And to be perfectly honest, I don't really know what it means to be a trained stand-up. We all have our own... That's the thing about stand-up. It's so individual. But the way that stand-up has helped me with acting, going back to flow state stuff, I know a little bit better how to like be loose and to really be in touch with my body and like to be totally present, which I think is a really critical part of acting that... I think a lot of people, we focus on like the emotional aspect and like replacement, like, and sense memory and things like that. I don't have that training. I'm not, I cannot know how to do that the proper way, but I can be super present and organic and authentic in a moment because of stand up, because of like being present. So that's like kind of like how I've brought stand up into acting.
Right. And so I'm actually, this is kind of weird, but I'm taking a Zoom acting class right now because why the hell not? And
yeah.
I've never taken an acting class before. And I actually am like, you know, it's a beginner class. So there's enough basic stuff I can learn over Zoom. But it seems to me that like one of the goals, at least in a certain school of acting, is like knowing how to be yourself convincingly.
Totally yourself and organically yourself with all your little tics and your weird little things. That's much harder than people realize.
But that's stand-up done well, too.
Yes. Yeah, you're so right. That is stand-up done well.
Because we say the same jokes over and over again, but we have to make it seem like we're saying it for the first time. Like, we are just training ourselves to act as we learn to tell our jokes.
Yeah. And it's this is a music reference, but I almost think, like, doing the same jokes over and over again is such an amazing experience because there's a point there where you're able to improvise, not the words, but the timing and the intonation and just your presence and your performance on a joke so that it's like perfectly timed for that room. And that sort of reminds me of jazz a little bit where it's like, oh, you know the melody, but now you're like improvising on it like masterfully. And yeah, you're right. You're not thinking about the line anymore. And I think a lot of like, beginner actors, it's like so much about how do I say the line, and when you get really good, it's like you're not saying the line, you're just existing. And when you say a joke over and over and over and over again, it eventually disappears and you're just existing and you're just you.
Right. Like, I think like some stand-ups, they're very improvisatory on stage. Just like they do a lot of crowd work and riffing and all of that. And that's so cool. And I admire that. For me, like, I have to be super, super prepared. And then I can enjoy like those like micro improvisations within it.
Yes.
And I totally agree that it's like jazz, and it's much more like jazz than, because I've always said comedy is like music, you know, in a certain way, you know, with timing and, but it's more like jazz than like classical because of the improvisatory element of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're preparing, it is like music in that you're preparing a piece. Like the piece is always the piece. What room you're performing it in, and I imagine acoustics, and but that's the thing about being outside. You're playing that piece, but all of a sudden the meter has totally changed.
Right. Everything is completely off, and like also the laughs are like muffled behind the mask.
Oh my God. And, I imagine that this actually drives you more crazy than most people because of the timing aspect of it. I hadn't thought about your music background with timing, but
yeah, I mean, I feel like it's just probably it sucks for everyone, but yeah, sure. I'm much more because of my musical training. I am so much more bothered by stand-up outside.
Because of your time at Juilliard.
Yes.
I find I'm going three times as fast and I'm waiting half the time or sometimes less for laughs, and I'm louder. I'm like loud. So loud.
But I wonder if it's just us, because maybe the audience still hears the laughs around them, but we don't have it bouncing because of the lack of acoustic structure.
No, I think it affects them, because when you hear someone laughing, you laugh and you get less of that in the outdoor space.
Right.
I also think you feel less anonymous, which doesn't help because of the light. Like when you're all packed in a crowd, you're anonymous, so you can laugh at anything and no one knows that you're laughing. But like dispersed and outside, you make that joke that you wouldn't laugh at in front of people, but you would laugh at home. You'll laugh at that in a comedy club, but you will not laugh at that in daylight in Central Park.
On like your own giant pink blanket, like light shining down on you.
I'm like, lesbians are annoying, right? And no one laughs. But like in a comedy club, people would be like, yeah, they're kind of annoying.
Right.
That one you're allowed to publish because I'm
okay. Okay, yes. Ashley is a lesbian. We all know this now. So I know it's funny. Well, whatever. I do an intro, but obviously I wouldn't be like, so by the way, Ashley is gay. So all of the stuff that you hear her say,
you can say the name of my podcast. That would give it away.
I will definitely say the name of your podcast. But yeah, I think because of like the improvisatory element, whether or not it's like doing crowd work or within your joke, like I think that's why it was kind of what I was missing as a classical musician, because like, even though it's still a performance, I'm just basically trying to execute something exactly the same. I mean, you know, real classical artists would say it's like a little different each time as well, but it's just so much more nuanced. And there is this like energy with the back and forth with the audience that you get more with comedy. But I don't know. I feel like maybe acting is similar in that way where, you know, it is like executing something and then the response comes at the end with clapping. Although there can be laughs from acting on stage.
Yeah. Even when you're on set, you can feel the silent energy because you're playing off of someone usually right across from you or whatever, however the scene is set up. So you're getting energy from them about how well you're doing. And you're, I don't know, I feel this on stage too, but it's so much more exciting when I'm acting because I'm not as good at it. Sometimes the line will come out of your head, your face hole, and you'll be like, oh my God, did I just read that line like that? That was fucking hilarious. And then you have to be like, shut up. Stop. But like, you'll be like so surprised by your own performance. That's how in the moment you were. That's a great feeling. Yeah. I love that feeling.
Why do you think so many people like acting so much? Like, why is it so fun?
Why does everyone want to do it?
Yeah.
I think for the same reason everyone wants to do comedy. It's so accessible. You don't need anything really you can pretend to act in your shower.
Right.
You don't need an instrument. You don't need to buy anything. I mean, to really act, there are enormous hurdles, but like on an actual materials level, in theory, these things are so accessible. And we've all like done an act out to our friends, like in conversation.
Right. We've all, like, when you see acting done well, it looks easy. So you're like, well, I guess I could do that. So it's like the most accessible way to see yourself becoming like successful and famous.
Yeah. You don't have to buy a viola and like have to like actually do anything.
Right. You're like, I know how to talk and like scrunch my face and
yeah. do that. And you also don't get the direct feedback of the sound of the viola.
Right. Right. And then with comedy, like we've all made our friends laugh. So we're like, well, I guess I could probably do that.
And that's what kills people at their first open mic. They get up there and they bomb and you never see them again, ever. Even if they were like, okay.
Yeah. Well, that's why I also was talking about this with, I think, Sean Donnelly on this podcast, where like, you know, those annoying people who are like, I feel like I could do comedy. And we were both just like, just try it then. Like we're very like encouraging, because it's like, you know that if they try it, like they probably will just shut up and be like, oh, this is really hard. Or they're good and then they good that they tried it, you know?
Yeah. But I think the people who are like, I'd like to do comedy, but I don't know if I'll be good. Those are the people who are good. And then the people who are like, oh, I should do that. I'm funny at the office. You fucking suck. You're the worst.
Yeah. And I mean, it makes sense that the two don't have correlation. Cause I mean, for instance, I don't think I'm like that funny in person. Like I think I'm like pretty boring, you know? And like if I try, like I can, whatever.
I feel that way too.
Yeah. Like, and so many funny standups you hear like, oh, they're like actually super boring in real life.
Yeah. And, or like even like kind of spectrum-y, like they're not good socially. You hear that they are not great. I'm not great socially in a lot of ways. And I don't know what's wrong with me, but I've been told like, you didn't pick up on that. And I'll be like, no. And they're like, no, this is what happened. And I'll have to like go back years later. I'll tell a story to someone. They'll be like, how did you not pick up that she liked you? Or how did you not pick up this? I get that a lot.
I never sensed that from you, but maybe you and I just like are on like a similar level or so, like a wavelength, but I don't know. Maybe we're just, you know,
maybe we're both,
or maybe we're both just
both have Asperger's.
Yeah.
It's like mild Asperger's.
Oh yeah. I feel like I can like adopt kind of a fake thing when I have to and pretend, but it's like, it's a performance, you know? Like I've learned to sort of, and maybe that's everybody. Maybe everyone who is good socially is performing. I don't know if there exists like some natural state of being a good socializer.
You know what's really good? You just pretend that you're doing a podcast now. Just pretend to be interviewing people when you talk to them. That makes people love you. Every time I've left a conversation and they're like, Ashley's great. I did not contribute much.
Right. Because people love talking about themselves. So if you just keep asking them questions.
Yeah. You're like right now, I'm like, oh, I'm loving this conversation. And it's because I've been driving the entire thing.
But as a podcast host, I love it because I always get nervous before podcasts. I'm like, what are we going to, I hope like we both talk. And then you start doing it. It's kind of like when you haven't done stand up in a few days and you're like, do I remember how to tell jokes? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But then then you get the person, you're like, oh, people like talking.
You don't have a co-host either. So if you're not, I don't know if you had this experience yet, but I have interviewed, we have one podcast that we didn't release because they were just the shittiest group of people that I've ever spoken to in my entire life. And I just was like, I'm not putting this out there.
What do you say to someone when you don't release their podcast? Do you tell them or do you just hope they forget?
Audio problems.
That's funny because I did one episode with someone and there really was audio problems. Like
sometimes
there
are audio problems
and I couldn't post this podcast, but I hope he doesn't think it was because it was like a bad, if you're listening.
Well, now he does.
It was a great interview. You just had shitty audio.
No, it's a very common thing to have audio problems. So you said I had audio problems
over
and
Zoom.
I knew they were not going to reschedule because they sucked.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I'm so confident in their narcissism that I know they would never listen to this because they are not on it.
Yeah. Do you listen to podcasts you're on, like other people's podcasts?
No.
I used to.
I will download this one. I'll give you Thank that you. Download.
Thank you so much. When I first started comedy and like did like my first podcast, I downloaded it and listened to like every minute of it and was just like, oh, like that sounded weird. And now I can't.
Yeah, it just, I assume it's good. I tell my people, you know, I remember what happened. So I right. go, I tell my people, oh, this is good. But also, I don't listen to podcasts. I only yeah. listen to The Daily when I run.
Yeah, I find, do you hear music right now? Sorry, my boyfriend is like,
I don't.
Playing, okay. That's why I got weird, because I was like, I feel like this is going to bleed into the audio, but... Well, we're coming to towards the end of the podcast, and there's audio interference now anyway. So, Ashley, do you have any parting words of wisdom? Sometimes I ask guests this, or you can just
actual
say no.
ones. I would just like to say, I've spoken very confidently today, but I believe in my heart that I'm a piece of shit. So something I tell everyone is don't take advice from fucking anybody. No one knows what they're talking about. That's when I had students, I used to teach computer science. When I had students, I would like before I gave them any advice, I would be like, I'm a piece of shit. Like, don't listen to me, but here's what I think. So I don't know if you are an artist and that's why you're listening to this. I highly recommend The War of Art, a book. I love it. It really, I think has impacted a lot of people, a lot of really great artists. I think meditation is great. And also, I think do it with reckless abandon. Get rid of your plan B. Just fucking do it like it's your job every single day. I think those are the people that succeed. If you're trying to balance other things, it's not going to happen. So just do everything that you can to make it a priority first in your brain space and then financially. I know that's much harder to do, but like, don't have a job that takes up emotional, intellectual, creative real estate. Go serve coffee or whatever, you know?
Right. It's like, it's much better. I feel like that's actually a struggle I had with comedy and viola, where like viola kind of became like my day job, but it was still like taking up a lot of my sort of artistic energy. And sometimes I'm like, should I just like quit viola and become a barista so that I can like focus full time on comedy?
You can't leave viola at 5 p.m. You can't leave viola. It's not that type of job.
Right. I also think that's great advice. That sort of like, don't listen to me. I don't know what I'm talking about. Nobody does. That's such good advice because like, nobody does. I don't know.
No one fucking knows.
Yeah. Nobody knows.
There's so much luck in this industry. It's such a clusterfuck. You try to look for patterns of how it happens. There are so few, if any, you know. I would say there's only patterns about how to fail. There's no like patterns about how to succeed other than doing it every single day and being prepared for when you have the luck.
Right. Well, you can also just one piece of advice that a lot of people talk about is just deciding to fail over and over again, because that's when you know, that cliched expression, I forget who said it first, but you know, I've just kept figuring out different ways to fail before I succeed. I don't know. I'm misquoting somebody.
No,
but,
honestly, failure. I'm glad you're saying that right now, because I've been stressing about my fucking YouTube channel and all this shit, stressing about all kinds of things. But you're right. If you just look at it as an opportunity to fail, because there's nothing to lose.
Right. And every failure brings you closer to not failing. So, you know. Well, Ashley, it's been such a pleasure having you. And I hope we get to see each other in the not too distant future. Sorry, I'm like dictating an email to you right now. All best.
I hope this finds you well. These words coming out of my mouth, I hope they find you well.
In these uncertain times. Thank you for listening. For more, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter, both at @IsabelHagen_, and sign up for my mailing list at isabelhagen.com. And as always, please rate and review the podcast. Thank you so much, and take care.